Hi, my name is Dave Reske, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And I've got a really interesting guest today, Eric Curtis. Eric is the CEO of Curtis Strategy, an innovative consulting firm focused on designing breakthrough strategy and innovative business models that lead to future growth, relevance, and sustainability. Eric's passionate about working with his clients to address their most complex and challenging issues, helping them design and implement the strategies needed to succeed no matter what happens in the marketplace, which is a very interesting challenge, Eric. I'm sure you'll talk about that in our conversation. He's advised colleges and universities, healthcare and human service agencies, and many professional associations, inspiring to break the status quo and maximize their strategic impact. Eric, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So we like to start these conversations with a myth buster question to be provocative and just kind of help people kind of understand where you're coming from. And I'd like you to talk about mergers for nonprofits. What's a, because this is a particular area of expertise for you, what's a myth that you think most people have about the way nonprofits can come together or work in mergers that's just not true?
That's just not true. Well, I think, you know, a lot of what we're seeing right now is that technology is affording organizations to operate at scale way more than it has in the past. And that is coupled with a lot of change in funding and regulation. Is putting some external pressures on organizations to come together. And so part of the challenge that you face in a merger is really around culture. Organizations coming together, they see the strategic vision, they understand maybe the financial benefits or getting additional staffing, which is a huge issue these days, those benefits that might come from a merger. But there's this piece of culture and succession and looking at how you actually achieve the outcomes, desired outcomes from the merger once it's done. The implementing and transacting the deal, you know, is really exciting because you've got CEOs and boards really excited to talk with the new partner, you know, talk through the strategic rationale as to why we're doing it, and really get to know each other at a deeper level. But once the deal closes, whether that's a merger, whether that's an affiliation, if it's a merger, a lot more change is happening. And so there's a lot of misunderstandings about how big some of that change can be and the impact to culture. And so if you think about two organizations coming together, you have a lot of change that's going to occur right at that date. And that can be things like staffing and reporting structures, and it can be, you know, learning new systems or getting familiar and acquainted with new peers or new bosses. And I think the excitement of moving to and through a merger is then immediately transitioned into the realities of integration and coming together. And so it's a lot bigger than most people think. Or most leaders think in the nonprofit space. And so that really needs a lot of dialogue and a lot of questions. As exciting as it is to think about how big we may be or how strong we may become together, the reality of when that change starts to occur and anxieties happen and things like that, leaders can't underestimate communication and planning, and really rolling up their sleeves to dive in to work with the team to either build clarity or address those fears. I think that's probably one of the biggest myths we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it sounds really hard to do that. And so, you know, you've worked a lot with nonprofits. You know, I can see like in the for-profit world, corporation, you know, the motivation to merge, you're going to lower costs, maybe increase growth rate, increase return on to the shareholders. Take me back a little bit. Let's unpeel this about why nonprofits want to do this. I mean, you're running a nonprofit successfully. You're achieving your mission. You're making a difference in health or education or sure. You know, social services, the kind of companies you work with. Why do they want to do this? It sounds like a lot of work
right.
to kind of get there. Yeah. So what are you finding?
So let me back up and just, you talked about one point. I just want to differentiate before I answer that question sure. is, is that there's a big difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit merger, right? In a for-profit merger, there is a financial beneficiary. There is a buyout of some sort, and that doesn't exist in the nonprofit space. And I think that's really important for the board of directors to understand, because boards may have experience in for-profit M&A. And so their expectation around how the transaction should go and the speed of it might be dramatically accelerated from the reality of how fast it can go. Because in a nonprofit transaction, it's about trust. It's about relationship. There's a great CEO we work with, and she always said, you know, things move at the speed of trust. And that is, you know, a profound statement, I think, and really captures some of the challenges that exist in doing these mergers is about trust. It's about relationships. It's about influence. And so that's just a side note, kind of differentiating, you know, the distinguishing factor between a for-profit and a nonprofit. There's some other nuances and things like that, but there's a lot of reason organizations are doing it. I mean, we work in health and human services, higher education, associations, credit unions, you know, a lot of the larger 501c type organizations. And so when you look at health and human services, it's really structured around population health. And how do we better understand the individual, and how do we better understand the communities? And that's very data driven. And so technically, the more people we serve in a particular community, and the more services that they are receiving that we can consolidate under one umbrella, the more we know about them. So that means the more we can impact outcomes. And that outcome might be for an individual or their family, or that outcome might be for understanding what's happening in a community from a health perspective. And there's cost savings associated with that systemically, or quality of service associated with that. When you look at things like higher education and associations, I'm going to lump them into the same category, because one of the biggest value propositions in associations is the education that they deliver to their members, right? So those are the 501c6 member-driven organizations, and then you have higher ed. So what's happening is, as we move into the digital space, right, that technology enabling us to manage at scale, I am unrestricted geographically now where I can deliver education. And I can deliver that at a global level through the work that we do as an association or college and university. So really the differentiating factor becomes, either at the association level, what niche knowledge do we have that we can harness, and that content that nobody else has? And in the higher ed space, it's what experience can we deliver, you know, inside and outside the classroom, or how do we differentiate that might become even more important. And then, you know, if you jump over to the credit union space, they're getting pushed digital as well. So, you know, they went from somebody walks into a bank to, you know, this is my bank on my phone, and it travels with me everywhere I go. And so how do you digitize payments and, you know, your interaction with credit union members? And that dramatically changes not only the technology needs within an organization for them to work with their application providers and their core processors and things like that, but also how they train and support their members in a hybrid state. We'll call it, you know, serving them through the branch and serving them through digital. So again, a lot of these changes and transformations within each sector have been driven because of technology opportunities. And those are going to continue to progress, because as certain technology solutions get cheaper, or AI becomes more available to, you know, smaller size organizations, they're going to be able to use that in with the data that they have to then keep continuously informed decision making, making them even more strong in the marketplace.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. So it feels like you're saying that they're excited about accelerating the impact that they can have, and these technology factors are maybe changing the way they think about the impact that it can have, or either creating, you know, challenges they've got to overcome through the merger, or opportunities that they can take advantage of. So they kind of want to accelerate that. But those are big strategic decisions. And I imagine, well, let's go back to what you said about the speed of trust. I think that's really powerful. So when you bring these two organizations, how are they getting a feel for that trust between the two boards, the two CEOs, the two executive teams? Imagine that's a very complicated dance. to bring
together. It is. And we actually wound up crafting our process from the experience we developed in doing a lot of the M&A work, just to continuously fine tune it. And it's really about relationships. And if you think of how those progress, it's, you know, maybe starts out with the CEOs grabbing a cup of coffee and sharing some ideas. And that develops into a vision for how they could work together. And that develops into some detail over a series of meetings for them to understand enough what this potential partnership and relationship is to then be able to communicate it to others. And it's putting a plan together. And then you expand that conversation, and maybe the CEOs and the board chairs get together. And that starts to become a more sticky conversation because there's more there. And then that gets expanded to the executive committee and then eventually the boards. And what happens is as that relationship progresses and each side gets to know each other, and that's kind of how we look at part of our role in the initial phases is that bridge to bring the relationship and manage the relationship, bring it together and manage it. So as that call it shared vision and discussion of that strategic rationale evolves, it's really moving from something that's a vision that's incomplete and full of holes to something that gets more and more complete because more and more opinions and ideas are wrapped around it. And then eventually that turns into a letter of intent, right? We memorialize what we talked about, what we're excited about, the vision and things like that in a letter of intent. And that helps to formalize kickoff, right? So for nonprofits, especially the small ones, they might not, everything moving at the speed of trust, that's all well and good. You might have some great discussions, but the second something makes it to a legal document and it's black and white, not only does it become real, but the language is very specific, right? And so that requires some finessing and kind of building a pathway towards understanding that you're going to see, hey, a company is going to come in as a sole member, a parent corporation to yours. That language is, it can look like it's a hostile takeover, but in the reality, it's just black and white, really clear legal language. And so it's getting people familiar with that. And then that LOI ensure that letter of intent ensures that because it's a legal document, it gets its time and its time and attention at the board meetings. And then once they sign that, they're really off to the races. And what they're doing at that point is they're doing some due diligence. They're looking, you know, they're looking at a bunch of documents about each other. You know, how do your finances look? What kind of benefits do you have? Staffing models, structures, insurance, vendors, funding, et cetera. Like all of that stuff gets kind of thrown into a repository. And it's a way for the relationship then to, you know, it's how we get to know each other at a deeper, more intimate level. And as you can imagine, a bunch of questions arise from that. So there's certain points when you're dealing with a merger, right, that there's the big discussions that need to be had. And those are what's the surviving brand? What's the surviving board look like? And what's the surviving leadership team? None of those are easy topics, right? Because there's no leverage in the game. There's no financial benefit. It's all influence, trust, and relationship. And so if you tell an organization that's been around for 100 years, because they're smaller, your brand's going away, there's an emotional response to that. Or, you know, you tell an organization, we're taking 3 out of your 15 board members because proportionally that's how things stack up. There's an emotional response to that. A lot of the mergers that we've seen have been as a result of succession planning. And a lot of the affiliations are more tools that organizations are using because they have 2 leaders in their prime and you know, they can work together really well and those cultures align. But it's those big hurdles that enable the boards and the leadership teams to work together and kind of battle through. And the more they do that, the more you start to realize there is cultural alignment because they are willing to have the hard conversations together. They are willing to roll up their sleeves. And when they come out of that on the other side, things typically move really fast. Yeah. And that's because, you know, there's a huge level of trust because they just battled around some topics and they had some really great dialogues back and forth. They now trust each other. They have an understanding of how people respond to different philosophies and different thinking of each organization. And so that becomes a really important factor as part of due diligence and getting the letter of intent done is tackling those hard topics.
Yeah, there's so much to do there. So what's your role? What's Curtis Strategy? How do you guys get involved with them to kind of make that all happen?
Sure. It's a great question. So there's kind of three different milestones or three different dynamics as part of our engagement. And the first one is really to support the relationship or the designing a strategy to go find a relationship and get those to the point where there can be a letter of intent or a shared understanding. So that once we get to the letter of intent, there's a transaction there. And in the beginning, we're really supporting that relationship. So we're helping them go through a process that we designed around how to build that relationship, how to build clarity in what this is, right? And then once they have that, they're really moving to transacting the deal. And that's when the letter of intent is signed to the closing, right? And that is helping them facilitate the continued facilitation of the relationship, but also being the one that can pose, ask, or put on the table the really hard questions that need to be answered. Like, who's the surviving CEO? That's an awkward discussion because, you know, they've had a really great relationship. They want to maintain that relationship, but that needs to be approached in a very particular way. So we support that, and then we support the due diligence, and we might liaise with lawyers and communication, PR organizations, and things like that. Once the deal closes, you're really looking at conducting a level of integration, and that's when we do a lot of the structured design of what this would look like as a combined organization, roles and responsibilities, and really diving into, you know, what gaps do we need for, you know, if we double in size, well, what capabilities and gaps do we need now to fill now? Because we're a totally different sized organization that has different needs. So we support that whole kind of, we'll call it transition from we've got a relationship to we're transacting a deal to, you know, we're married now and we need to figure out what this house looks like.
Yeah. So you're really holding their hand through that entire process, facilitating it with probably deep technical understanding of what the LOI has to contain to what decisions they have to make to how to operationalize and those other decisions they've got to put together there.
Yeah. There's a big education. Absolutely. But there's a big education piece there as well. So for boards or leaders that may not have gone through this, we really want them to go in with, you know, eyes wide open. And so part of that is for them to understand what that process would look like, you know, from start to finish. What are the major decisions that need to be, you know, those major decision milestones along the way, so that they are prepared and they're prepared around what a certain model looks like, right? The affiliation model in certain markets is very new. In others, it's not. And if it's a merger, it might be, them understanding the difference between a for-profit and a nonprofit and the pace of that. Or it might be just, you know, them understanding as a board, okay, when am I getting paperwork or things to review? And what do I need to look out for? Or how do I participate as a board committee member, if I'm on a steering committee, as part of this engagement, because they want to make sure they're doing their fiduciary obligation, and the CEO and the leaders want to make sure that they're doing their role as well. So there's a lot of education that goes on there.
Yeah. And that's a huge amount of the value that I'm sure you provide. You talk about this, and I'm sure with your consulting work, you have a very straightforward and comprehensive process. But what do you see go wrong? What kind of usually breaks in these situations? I've been through a number of for-profit mergers, both being bought and buying other companies. And I'm at the end of the process, I'm always shocked that they ever happen. Because yeah, there's so much that goes into due diligence and personalities and the data. In your experience, you know, what do you see going wrong most often?
I think it's a few things. Number one is the compatibility of both leaders, right? They need to have a shared vision, shared values. They need to be able to have difficult conversations with each other. And so what can get in the way of that is ego, right? With large egos becomes large problems. But if leaders go into it for the right reason and they're willing to compromise or work together or give as well as take, right? there really needs to be that reciprocating relationship there. Those leaders achieve the most and do the best when it counts, which is when the deal is done and you have to integrate the organizations and build that new culture of two combined organizations. I would say the other thing that we've seen, and this is not very frequent, but is if leadership is misrepresenting their intent. And we have seen deals where, you know, the CEO wanted either treat it as a hostile transaction when it wasn't, or, you know, they had promised they would retire as a result of it, but got so excited participating in the deal that they reneged on that. Those are few and far between. I think the biggest one is really around the ability of leadership to play together as part of this, and knowing that, you know, you're not getting your way 100% of the time, and there's going to need to be some compromise there because it is a relationship, especially if they're close in size, right? That becomes more complex because, you know, they want to be mergers of equals, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's a surviving leadership team, there's a surviving brand, a surviving board. The board is less of an issue in that case, but, you know, they may not be equal in the end. Yeah. So I think those are a lot of things to work through, barriers and obstacles to address. I think another one is that the boards, you have different levels of sophistication with boards based on their size. So if it's a small $1 million, $2 million nonprofit versus, you know, a $300 million nonprofit or $500 million nonprofit, their boards are going to have different levels of sophistication. And as you get smaller, they will require more attention and support and education and things like that. So that needs to be, that's an obstacle or a barrier, because the larger organization might want to run really fast or make decisions really quick because that's what they're used to. And the other is still, you know, unsure, needs to vet out the relationship, wants to move at a slower pace just to make sure they're not making mistakes and things like that. So there's those timelines that also need to be reconciled in how you approach different boards.
Yeah. Fascinating. So much going on there. I love what you said about the compatibility of leadership. I'm sure there's a lot of factors that can wreck a deal, but you've just summarized all of my experience in M&A.
Oh, that's good.
So where I've had like good relationships and really had that trust with the other, you know, the other CEO, it's worked well. Where I've had that sneaking feeling that maybe this isn't really a good thing, but I've gone ahead anyway, it's been a disaster. So.
Yeah. It's the servant leaders, really. It's like that we see the ones that are most successful. They're the ones serving their staff. They're the ones that it's a team first approach versus themselves. Those are the ones that want to make sure that they've communicated as much as they can communicate, that they've done as much as they can do, that they, you know, have made as much connection and relationship as much as they've worked on process and things like that. It's those leaders with the heart that are really winning, you know, these types of transactions once they're done, right? That's what's most important. It's like getting it done. That's the fun part, right? Like once it's done, that's the real work. And it's the ones that are really compassionate and caring about their team that really can bring two cultures together. Because as much as there is cultural alignment, they're still two different companies.
Yeah, fascinating. Let me switch gears a little bit and talk about Curtis strategy. So, you know, one of the things we think about a lot in NowSpeed is the impact we're trying to make on the world. And we have this core value about changing the world through the work of our clients. How do you see yourself or your organization changing the world? Like, what's the impact that you see yourself making?
I think that's a great question. And I definitely see it through two lenses. You know, one is just really passionate about helping other leaders. I think that's something that, you know, I've experienced in my life where I either had people that supported me in major areas that I was, you know, in need of support around, or, you know, just didn't know a lot about, and they came in and they helped me in certain ways that made a huge difference in where I am today. And so I'm really driven, you know, in working with CEOs about helping them achieve whatever it is they need to get done. Because some of those things are either scary places because they're unknown, or challenging places because the size and scope of the change is enormous. And they need support there, and they might not know how to start. So I really love that part. The really great, you know, kind of added part there is that, you know, in working with these organizations, you know, you get to work with a lot of people they serve. So whether that is, you know, somebody that's homeless and, you know, they've got a young daughter and, you know, they used to be, you know, fully employed, then they wind up getting in trouble, they're homeless. And you know, you come in doing strategic planning, you talk about, hey, if you could start a business, you know, what business would you start? And they light up and they talk about their aspirations, and you can build a strategic plan around, you know, working with homeless around, you know, startup companies and things like that, you know, or working with, you know, intellectual developmental disabilities or, you know, students that want to, you know, really engage differently in a college and university. That's awesome. It's super rewarding and just an added benefit in doing some of the work that we do. Because, I mean, the majority of what we do is working with the leaders of a nonprofit. But a lot of times, if we're doing strategic planning, we get the opportunity to interview and engage with the stakeholders that they serve. That's where you find out a lot of information, but it's also where you can build a deeper understanding of their mission to support wherever they need to head in the future. And that's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, it's got to feel really good to be making that kind of impact with your clients, helping them achieve their mission faster, and just seeing the impact on the individual lives of people, whether it's mental health or education or helping the poor or something. That's an incredible way that you're making a huge impact on the world. So very cool. Well, this has been a great conversation, Eric.
I appreciate it. You've got a lot
of expertise. You're making a huge impact, and you're working with these CEOs and boards to help them get to a new level and achieve their mission a better way. So yeah, thanks for taking the time. If people want to reach out to you and connect and learn more about what you do or your services, how would they connect with you?
They can go to curtisstrategy.com and that will explain a little bit about what we do and where we do it. And they can also connect with us through the website.
That's great. Well, again, Eric, thanks for taking the time. It's a great conversation, and I'll look forward to hopefully working with you more in the future.
Appreciate it, David. Thanks.
All right. Have a great day.